It's a special President's Day edition of Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you weren't aware of this already, drinking and the U.S. presidency go hand in hand, and not even prohibition could prevent U.S. presidents from imbibing. Mark Will Weber has written a book on the subject called Mint Juleps with Teddy Roosevelt, The Complete History of Presidential Drinking. He joins us now by phone. Mark Will Weber, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thanks for asking me, Paul.
In most cases with U.S. presidents, it's not a matter of do they drink or don't they, but whether it's wine, whiskey, or some sort of signature cocktail.
It's true. They all have their preferences, and some of the early gentlemen tended more towards wine, but they also would drink beer. And about the time you get to, say, Andrew Jackson, you begin to see some of the presidents, especially from the middle parts of the country, and by that I mean sort of Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky, begin to drink more whiskey.
Let's start with the first president, George Washington. What were his drinking habits?
George Washington liked a lot of different things. I'd say among his favorite drinks were Madeira wine. He loved champagne. And he also really liked this special porter beer, dark beer, that was brewed with molasses. The kind that he liked the best was made by a guy in Philadelphia by the name of Robert Hare. So he would write to his friends in Philadelphia and ask if Mr. Hare had made manufactured any of his exquisite porter lately, and could they ship a few grosses of it to Mount Vernon? And then he'd say something like, because I know there will be a need for it. So he liked this beer, and the Yards Brewery out of Philadelphia actually makes a very close facsimile to the porter that George Washington liked, and they call it George Washington Tavern Ale.
So then along comes Jefferson, and he had a more refined taste, apparently.
Yes, it's not out of line to call him the first father of American wine, although he certainly learned some things from people like Benjamin Franklin, who was over in Paris before Jefferson arrived there. But because of his diplomatic time in France, Jefferson actually had the opportunity to visit a lot of the best vineyards in France and even northern Italy. And he kept meticulous notes about it and contacts so that when he returns to America, he's constantly writing to these vineyards in France and Italy asking for their very best stuff. And when he can get it, he stocks up his cellars at Monticello with it.
Was there any president that you could say was an alcoholic?
Absolutely. I think Franklin Pierce, who died of cirrhosis of the liver, certainly would qualify for that. And he knew he had an alcohol problem and actually quit for a rather lengthy time at one point in his life and signed the temperance pledge, in fact. But when the Mexican War broke out, he enlisted and got back into the drinking habit, unfortunately, and then never quite shook it.
And then when his party failed to support him for re-election, apparently Pierce felt that the only thing worse than being president was being an ex-president, and was quoted as saying, "What can an ex-president of the United States do except get drunk?"
Yes, that's attributed to him. And I wonder if that's exactly accurate, but it was certainly whispered down through the halls of Congress and the Senate long enough that it was accepted as a factual statement, or certainly something that he might have said. And Henry Cabot Lodge and his father were both people that told that story on a regular basis.
We're talking with Mark Will Weber. He's author of the book Mint Juleps with Teddy Roosevelt, The Complete History of Presidential Drinking. At the other end of the spectrum from what we've been discussing so far is President Lincoln, who apparently could almost be called a teetotaler.
Yes, Lincoln is very interesting because he made whiskey as a young man growing up in Kentucky. And then as a young entrepreneur in Illinois, he and his partner sold whiskey out of what they called loosely a grocery store. So when he debated Douglas in their famous Lincoln-Douglas debates, Douglas would often say, "Mr. Lincoln, you made whiskey and you sold whiskey." And Lincoln would smile and say, "Yes, Mr. Douglas, but I have quit my side of the aisle and you, sir, are still a big customer on your side," which he was, because Douglas was known to be a big drinker, and some even said his great oratory skills corresponded to the amount of whiskey he consumed.
Prohibition was something that was very difficult for Americans who enjoyed a good drink to deal with. And that was certainly no exception for the presidents, particularly Warren Harding. Describe the lengths that he would go to get a drink.
Warren Harding, and this actually precipitated the idea of this book because this was chronicled in a book about the president's golfing called First Off the Tee. But keep in mind, it's during Prohibition. Nobody's supposed to drink or transport alcohol. But Harding would habitually go to the golf course, and he would stash a fifth of whiskey in his golf bag. And every three, four holes, he'd take a pop or two of whiskey. So, yeah, and then, of course, he also staged the poker games at the White House and at the wee hours of the morning where you could get whatever you wanted to drink. And at least on one occasion, he lost a fine set of china to somebody in his card game and then had it shipped to their Georgetown home the next day. So, yeah, Harding was pretty flagrant against many rules, and he had a lot of the bad habits that were later attributed to people like Clinton, for instance, on top of the alcohol. So, yes, Harding's quite a study, and if you see those lists of how they rank the presidents, he's almost inevitably in the bottom five presidents. It's just a matter of where.
And, of course, some presidents really struggled with their drinking, and one of them was Andrew Johnson, who, you tell us, showed up a little inebriated at his inauguration.
Yes, that was infamous, and we should point out that it was actually his vice presidential inauguration. It was Lincoln who was president, but in that day and age, they sure to have the vice president speak as well. And Johnson had apparently been ill, and of course, in that time period, if you had the flu or a bad cold or anything, their first inclination was to treat you with alcohol. So Johnson tried to tell Lincoln that he wasn't feeling well and he didn't want to make the journey from Tennessee, and Lincoln insisted that he come. So Johnson arrived in Washington City a bit under the weather to begin with, and then he attended a party the night before the inauguration of a gentleman by the name of John Forney, who was a newspaper editor and a political operative, shall we say. And Forney was a big drinker, so one thing led to another, and he drank at Forney's party, and the next morning his head was bothering him before he has to give his speech, and somebody decided that maybe a hair of the dog strategy would work, so they gave him even more alcohol. So by the time he got up to make his talk, which was supposed to be a mere 5 minutes, he rambles on for almost 20 minutes, and he's belligerent to people in the crowd. He's not making sense. He's staggering around like a drunken sailor, and they finally give him what I would say the equivalent of the Broadway hook and drag him off the stage. And Lincoln, they said, was so embarrassed that he was trying to crouch down his 6'4" frame in embarrassment of the whole incident.
Another president who struggled with alcohol was Richard Nixon, and he apparently was prone to drunk dialing.
Yes.
How did this manifest itself with Richard Nixon?
So Nixon, especially during the Watergate era, where things were starting to fall apart for him, and he would seclude himself out in San Clemente in California, so he'd be on California time. So maybe late at night out there, say midnight or so, he'd be a little inebriated. And he also was taking certain medicines, which you're not supposed to drink with. So the combination of the two got him intoxicated quite easily. And then he would make a bunch of phone calls to some of his cronies, and usually the last call of the night, he would call his poor lawyer in Washington, and some of his aides would go, "Mr. Nixon, you do realize it's 3 o'clock in the morning in Washington," and Nixon would say, "I don't care, get Lenny on the phone." And so his poor attorney would get calls at 3, 4 in the morning back on the East Coast talking to an almost incoherent Nixon who couldn't handle alcohol very well to begin with. And interestingly enough, Ulysses S. Grant was the same way. His face would flush. He couldn't drink dial, of course, but his face would flush after one glass of whiskey, and he'd want more. And we look at this burly-looking fellow on the $50 bill and think, that guy could probably hold a lot of liquor, but that wasn't the case. He got inebriated quite rapidly. So when people would say to me, "Well, Grant was a big drinker, right?" And I'd say, "No, Grant was a bad drinker." And the same certainly can be said about Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Now, did Grant, when he drank, did he get on the telegraph and start?
He didn't do that as far as I know, but what he had done a few times to his detriment would he'd still go riding, so it was almost the equivalent of drunk driving. And he had one very embarrassing incident in New Orleans after they had won the Battle of Vicksburg, which was a huge turning point in the war. They had a celebration parade down in New Orleans, and they had been celebrating quite heartily at a luncheon prior to it. And he had a new horse, a horse that he hadn't been on before, and he got thrown from the horse and was actually laid up, I think, for a couple weeks. And some of his aides admitted that he probably had too much to drink when that happened.
Were there any first ladies who influenced drinking in the White House?
Well, yes, in many different ways. The most famous anti-drinking person in the White House would be Rutherford B. Hayes's spouse, became known as Lemonade Lucy because of her stance of not wanting any alcohol at all in the White House, and she was quite popular with the temperance movement because of that. They worshipped her, and in fact, after Hayes was no longer president, they tried to pressure Chester Arthur into putting a big portrait of her up in the White House, and he refused because he was a drinker. But Lucy Hayes, one of the reasons she really was vehement about no alcohol in the White House is early on in their term, just maybe a month into it, these two young Russian dukes came to visit, and the Secretary of State, I believe, implored them to at least have some wine or brandy or some kind of alcoholic drink, saying these Europeans aren't going to understand this no alcohol policy. So the Hayeses reluctantly agreed, and apparently the young Russian dukes came in and drank everything that they got their hands on and caused some sort of scene. I could never find out what they actually did, but it would be insinuated after the debacle with the young Russian dukes. So they must have done something. I don't know whether they got sick or bothered some of the female attendants at this party or what, but they did something that was frowned upon, and after that, she said, never again.
Well, Mark, can you leave us with one signature presidential drink recipe that would be the most appropriate with which to celebrate this President's Day?
Well, I was just recently at an event where we had some of the presidential drinks. It was a local restaurant in my town in Bethlehem here. And the drinks that they served, one was a rum swizzle that was that FDR was quite partial to, when he used to like to drink these rum swizzles when he was out on his boats, or as the Roosevelts probably said, yachting, something like that. So he liked his rum swizzles, and basically that's a couple ounces of rum and then a little bit of orange juice and a little bit of lime juice or something like that, and then you can garnish it with a little piece of orange or pineapple. And another one that's interesting, but be careful because it's all alcohol, is the McKinley's Delight, which was named after William McKinley from his 1896 election. Some bartender in St. Louis came up with it. And it's very much like a Manhattan, so a bourbon-based drink or a rye-based, if you wish. And then you add a little bit of absinthe at the end, and there's a little cherry brandy in there. They renamed it to remember the Maine once the Spanish-American War broke out.
McKinley, huh?
McKinley's Delight. I don't know if he drank a whole lot of them himself, but his followers who wanted him to get the GOP nod in that 1896 election were partial to it.
They apparently were delighted by it. We've been talking with Mark Will Weber. He is a Bethlehem resident and the author of a book called Mint Juleps with Teddy Roosevelt, The Complete History of Presidential Drinking. Fascinating stories in there, Mark. We appreciate you sharing them with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Paul. It was very interesting to kick around some of these stories from Mint Juleps.
And thank you for listening to this special President's Day edition of Essential Pittsburgh. If you missed any portion of the show or would like to revisit past segments of our program, you can go to our website at wesa.fm. For now, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Happy President's Day, everyone.